Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, and welcome to the 321st episode of the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. I'm Kyle Barton, and I'm here with my co-host, Sean Wisniewski. Today, we're visiting with phenomenal workbench builder, accomplished woodworker, and instructor, Mark Hicks of Plate 11 Woodworking. So, welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks.
So, I'm very excited to talk to you about some things you're going to be offering. But before we get into that, let's see what's going around on the woodworking news. So, I just have a couple of things that I found. One is that Powermatic has a new drill press out. I guess this is their new top-of-the-line drill press. It's called the PM2820EVS.
So it rolls off the top.
Exactly. But it looks like a behemoth. And
it's
has a
1 horsepower,
yep.
120 volt,
yep.
Bandsaw. Or sorry, drill press.
Yeah, but it's got a whole lot of variable speed options, some servo motor controls to keep the torque in place, and it has a bunch of accessories you can get for the table, including some dust extraction accessories.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's pretty nice, and it also has a bigger table, a wood table that uses the, what are those clamps that fit into the dovetail? I just bought some.
They're like
The micro jig ones. You know what I speak of.
Yeah, but I can't.
It would be nice if I could actually think of the name of them.
Sure.
It's micro jigs dovetail clamps. That's what it is. Okay.
Yeah,
so
it's basically, yeah.
You had all the right words. You just didn't put them in the right order.
Exactly. Order. So So that's out there. So if you're in the market for a drill press, you might want to check that out. It runs about $2,000.
Yeah.
So it's a little up there for a drill press, and I'm not sure I would choose it over that Nova drill
so
press.
So that I was going to ask, because is that the one, and I don't know how long ago I think, but Dave Pasciuto did a whole video on this, the auto reversing. You know, it's got a depth stop, but then at that particular micron level depth, it then reverses the drill bit automatically.
Yep, and shuts it down.
And shuts it down and stuff. Like, so there's no chance of over. And I mean, that's kind of crazy, CNC control of a drill press, which traditionally is like, if the thing spins and I put it down. Like, you know, but I don't know price-wise if that actually competes with it or not. Like,
yeah, I think the Nova one is about, I want to say they got a benchtop one and a floor stand one. I want to say they're probably about $1,600 for those.
Okay.
So
you'd really have to get down into the brass tacks and see.
Yeah, and what you're going to be using it for. But, you know, they're all in that market. So, you know, if you're looking for a drill press and you will settle for nothing less than the first rate, then that's definitely to go take a look at along with.
I will say I like the idea of the kind of the drivetrain they have compared to what my dad's got a jet, you know, floor standing drill press, but it's the whole thing, the three pulleys, you know, and then the tensioner on the side, and you've got to like get this whole thing to get the belts just right to do different speeds, and there's three different speed ranges and stuff. This kind of digital drive stuff is great to see.
Yeah.
But same kind of thing, like a thing like this, you're going to get one and you're going to keep it for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You know, so it's if you're refitting your shop or if you're starting out and you've got a clear plan of what you want, this might be the right thing.
Right. Now, one thing I noticed, and this isn't a new tool, but it kind of shocked me on the pricing, was Rycon has a benchtop drill press. It's one of those radial ones where you can actually swing the head of the drill back and forth at various angles. I think up to like 45 degrees or something like that. And it was like $400.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, that's good.
Radial,
I think that, yeah, I think their floor standing one was like a couple of $100 more than that. So if you like that capability, it's definitely something to take a look at. I didn't realize it was at that particular price point. I was like, interesting.
Yeah. But that being said, I mean, you've got your, you know, a Grizzly benchtop drill press goes for $400 or so. So it's, you know, maybe it's just in the benchtop realm, it runs for anywhere from, you know, high 100s to high 300s, give or take.
I just thought with the feature of doing the radial stuff, it would be a little bit more than that. So
Kind of
who knew? But next up, and this really has nothing to do with woodworking. I just thought it was kind of interesting.
Can you cut wood with it?
Yes, you can.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Bantam Tools has introduced a desktop CNC milling machine that will, it's basically a CNC mill, and it will fabricate anything out of wood, aluminum, brass, steel, plastics, and more, it says. But it kind of reminds me of, I've seen CNC mills before, and this one's relatively small, kind of like 3D printer size.
Yeah, Tormach makes something of a smaller size, don't they? And that's because I pay attention to makers. But I don't know the dimensions of that one, but it seems like they have a version that's, desktop-ish. This is like 20 by 20 by 20, give or take.
Yeah, and I think the working capacity is like 7 inches by 9 inches by 3.5 inches. Yeah. So like a small 3D printer. But it's $3,600. Now, it's not something I'm going to rush out and buy. Mm-hmm. But if it's like anything else and the prices of these things continue to fall, I have some stuff I would like to be able to CNC in my
shop. Know what? Some of your
I'm sure Mark has some stuff too.
I'd love to be able to make some hardware now and again. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. So,
I mean, forgive me. Do you know who Bantam Tools is?
I've heard of them. I think they're in the milling arena.
Okay. I mean, it says something. I'm not.
Yeah. Now what?
I'm not well versed in that.
Yeah. Now, if it's a great brand or not, I would not know. But most of the stuff that I got this out of Woodshop News, and most of the stuff they promote is fairly good.
Yeah, I just went to their website. CNC milling and PCB milling is their business.
Yeah. And it looks looks like this works off common AutoCAD software, including Fusion 360.
Yeah, man, that is just the way. I'm a CAD jockey, but not a 3D prototyping CAD jockey of that sort. Like that's a different ball game. But the rapid prototyping, the rapid production, the unique ways. I mean, I've seen like Jimmy DiResta, was doing these big whiskey display cases that look like old trailers, right? Mm-hmm. And he figured out that, I could make a wheel and I could cut it out of plywood. And he's got a huge CNC mill, right? I can do this and I can make it like a puzzle piece. And I can cut it into 5 pieces and I can make those basically come out of a thinner section of plywood. I can make 3 wheels out of the same piece of plywood that I could cut 2 circles out of, and you go, oh yeah. I mean, there's a way, and it's like this kind of, ingenuity in your own design. You start finding better and quicker or more efficient ways of doing things with the kind of thing. I love seeing more and more come to it. This is small for the price, especially. Yeah. I think it's pretty darn small. Considering what's the one, the real almost DIY one where you like it leans up on the wall. Tim Sway just got one and he's working with it.
Are you talking of the
Laszlo? No.
Yeah, something like that. That it kind of has like wires or something.
It's chain driven from 2 points, and like they've got an intelligent Z axis on it.
Oh really? I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's getting just now to like I think the $1,000 point range,
mm-hmm.
and it literally almost cuts a 4x8 sheet of plywood. Mind you need to have that much wall space to put this thing on because it's semi vertical. But anyway, I love that. That came out years ago. That one originally, and it was like this DIY kind of thing, and we put it together with found parts, and you can do this. It's just not quite the same as a mandrel stepper motor driven thing. And, you're seeing everything from that to then, like this thing that, for a few thousand extra dollars, it's a much smaller thing, but it's probably incredibly accurate and then can do harder metals and different materials, whatever you may need. Kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So again, that's Bantam, Bantam. So just search for them and take a look at it if it interests you. Or you just want to see something that looks kind of cool.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's funny because, I mean, what you've got in the show notes is, an article from Woodshop News. But then you go to their website, which is linked in there. which is BantamTools.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that CNC is the front center of their page. New Bantam Tools, desktop CNC milling, like boom. And they're showing it cutting aluminum. They're showing it, you know, the motors and the spindles and kind of cool stuff.
Yeah. It'd be cool to have something like that. But yeah, $3,600 is a little steep, but you know,
for sure.
Hey, 5 years, that could be down to $1,000.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And probably will be
that way. Considering, I mean, my public library has 3D printers.
Oh yeah. Mine too. Yeah.
You know, like that 5 years ago was like, whoa, you know, the bleeding edge and only a few had it and it was absorbently expensive.
It's still like that here.
I mean, it is to a degree, but you like, you can get a 3D printer for under $500.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my son got my old car and he didn't like it's a stick and he wanted to change the handle of the stick. And he found another one, but it didn't adapt right. And so he went into Tinkercad. He drew up a thing. He 3D printed it at school. And it's a sleeve adapter for the rod that's in the car and that fit the handle that he got, you know. And then he wanted to put his lacrosse handle on there. So he cut a lacrosse handle down and he made a thing that adapted to his lacrosse handle. 3D printed it at school in the library. Like, that's cool. That nothing we could have done when we were kids, right? Like, that's true rapid prototyping. I've got an idea. I think I can do it. Let me take a few measurements, draw it out, and bang, I've got one.
Hmm.
Crazy.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to what's in the shop. So, Sean, those bees paying off?
Mm-hmm. I say it's not in my shop, but it's in my house. It's been a matter of time. We split. There's a thing called a bee escape that I got that you put between boxes on a beehive, and it's basically one-way valves and they walk away from it. And so then we took away the top box of honey, which we left them twice as much honey. So they have got plenty to survive the winter, but this is just like our first year. Let's get some. And then we brought it inside and we go, how do we get this out of here? It's not a really, you know, the ideal way of getting honey out is, it flows really well when it's above 80 degrees. Well, our house isn't going to be above 80 degrees anytime soon, so that's not happening. But we tried.
Yeah.
And we tried, like, double boiling. Like, we laid frames above a tray on a sterno.
Yeah. See, if you were into chair making, you could have put it in your kiln.
Yeah, I know. I thought about that. I'm like, I was like, okay, what kind of, like, thin insulation, cardboard box, and a light bulb? Like,
you could.
What can I do here? Right. So, for a little more than that, we broke down and bought a spinner, which is a honey extractor, and you put the frames vertically in this thing and then hand crank it, and it just has a gearbox and it turns and spits honey out against the walls and pours down to the bottom. So at this point,
do I keep thinking of like one of those paintbrush cleaner things?
The paintbrush. Yes. Times a magnitude.
Oh, I would imagine. Yeah.
I mean, the frames are 14 inches long and six inches high. And anyway, yeah, but yes, similar where and it's a 90 degree gearbox. But yes, the same idea of like those egg beater type paint spinners. But we did that. You know, like the day we got it, we cleaned the damn thing out and we're like, put these frames in here. Let's get it going. And then it was, what do we do now? We'll let it set for a while, make the walls, let the walls like run down as much as they can. And then, okay, we got this double screen sieve type thing and let's pour it out through that. And now it's in a glass bowl.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a kitchen bowl, but, the next step is to actually pour it into jars and we're not going to sell it. There's not that much of it. We got, I was trying to say, I asked my wife, I said, okay, she hates math. I said, volumetric estimations. How many of these jars do we have in there? And she said, I was thinking about the bigger jars. I said, okay, well, how many of those do we have? We have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
It might be 2 8-ounce jars. It might be 4. We don't know. We'll find it once we start pouring it. But we officially have homemade honey. It's deep in color. My son has taken it a spoonful and put it over his oatmeal, and he says it tastes fantastic. Which is really, really cool considering it started with a small ball of bees that we got in May.
Not too bad.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And now we're worried. Now our focus, I won't say worried, our focus is getting them to winter properly or well.
Yeah.
To make sure they're fed and warm and we're debating putting up plants around them to break the wind, because they're kind of out in the middle of our yard, but we'll see. Other than that, a lot of yard work getting the leaves out to the street, and they haven't picked up in almost a month. And at this point, you could fill many trucks with how many leaves. Because my neighborhood is all overgrown. My neighbor, I think, has 8 oak trees, and they're very well-grown oak trees. And so the winds that we've gotten in a couple of days, they just blow into our yard, and that adds on to all the maples I have in my yard, and leaves on leaves on leaves on leaves. And with a time change, you know, between the end of workday to dark outside is about an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, I hate this time of year. So anyway,
it's really okay. So yeah, it's not different this year. I get it. Yeah. You know, but
it seems like it's getting darker.
It seems like it, and this is normal time, right? We're on standard time now for those states that are listening to us that have time like or savings time, which I know all three of ours do. But this is what it normally would be. It just seems like when it's dead dark by 6 p.m. for us, it's like you're deflated.
Yeah.
Like I have more time, but I don't want to go outside. It's dark. And I don't want to just mill around in the basement because it's not that bad outside. Like it's like this dichotomy of like, it's not cold and I don't want to huddle, but it's too dark to do anything decent. I don't know. It's crazy. Just before this tonight, like I was like, I had a half hour to blow. I'm like, what do I do? I could get into something, but then I'm only going to have a few minutes into it before I have something else to do. But just weird.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well. All right. So besides being depressed because of time changes, Kyle, what do you got going on?
Well, Patrick Brennan, a longtime friend of the show, Tecton Guild on Instagram. So he's moving from my area, the Houston-Galveston area, back up. To upstate New York. Both him and his wife are from there, and they have a bunch of family there, and the stars all aligned, and he had an opportunity to move back up there. So that's what they did. I helped him last week load up a big truck, box truck. I don't know. It was pretty damn big, 10,000 pounds capacity, something like that. So I helped him load up some of his heavier woodworking, and he has some metal shop tools too. So helped him load that up and move, and bought a bunch of maple from him at fire sale prices. So, you know, this is why I'm helping him out, you know. And I think he just posted today. He made it up there. He has a beautiful place that they're going to be staying at, and starting to unload the truck. So anyway, I think he'll be back down here in a week or so. So I'll probably make another trip up there and see if he needs help with anything else, and probably pick up some more wood. So, so that's been good. And then the other thing I've been doing is, I did a new batch of jigs, and I added a new, what I guess creature comfort to my stretcher jig. I got some feedback from actually one of our upcoming guests, so I'll keep that secret, but anyway, a few weeks ago, and he gave me some my Mark II jig that I came out with for my stretcher jigs. What I had done before is to do the tapered tenon. I was actually using the tapered tenon maker I had, and at the top of the tenon I would put a little line, and that line was at 15/16 of an inch. Well, when I got into doing this pattern turning to do these tapers on my lathe, I was no longer restricted by the size of my taper tenon cutter, so I said, it makes sense to do them at 1 inch. So I was making the tenons, the large diameter of the taper tenon for the stretcher jig at 1 inch. And I'd put a little reference line there where the tenon ended. And I got some feedback from him. You know, when I was doing that, he has one of my older Mark I jigs, I guess you would say. But he says he uses it to actually, when reaming. So he actually uses it as kind of a dummy leg. And with that mark there, he knows when he's reached the proper depth of 15/16 of an inch, which is, I don't know, typical. I'm saying in air quotes, the large diameter of a taper tenon of a leg. Most plans have them at 15/16 of an inch. Mm-hmm. So he actually uses that jig as kind of a dummy leg. And because it's a cylinder on the top part of it, he can lay a bevel gauge right up against that, so he can check as he does his reaming. So what I decided to do to my new stretcher jig, the Mark II version of it, is I just went ahead and not only am I having a reference line at the 1-inch mark where the tenon ends, but I'm now adding one at 15/16 of an inch. So,
feature comforts. I sound like you need to charge a dollar more every time.
Maybe. But I never thought about using the jig as a dummy leg when reaming. But once he said that to me, I went, yeah, that makes perfectly sense. It's got straight sides. It'd be easy to reference against the bevel gauge. So, so I did that. So if anyone bought my Mark II jig and would like that creature comfort before I started adding it, just reach out to me. I know a easy way to do that. So just reach out to me. I'd be happy to help you with that. And then besides that, I've now starting on, well, tomorrow I'll be starting on building the Adirondack chair for a friend of mine. So that's going to a friend of the family. So I'll be starting on that. They brought me the one they want copied, so I'm going to start disassembling that and milling up the lumber. And the friend that I'm building it for wants to have a little hand in the sauce, so to speak, when I build it. So probably in a weekend or two, he'll come down here and we'll put it together, or he'll watch me put it together. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that goes. Here, drive this screw. All right.
Here's some sandpaper.
Yeah, you now have skin in the game. Yeah, exactly. Here's some sandpaper. No, get away from the router. But anyway, so that's what I've been working on. So, Mark, what about you? What have you been working on?
Well, today I'm working on finishing up a workbench that's way overdue. Mm-hmm. And before that, I had a shave horse that I've been wanting for a long time to make a series of videos on, you know, how to build shave horse.
Yeah, yeah, you put out a couple so far, I think.
Yeah, I've got the footage all shot. That's mm-hmm. kind of what took so long is learning to film, and the editing process will start soon. But I finally got that done, got it shipped out. That shave horse actually went to Hong Kong.
Wow.
Which is pretty exciting. I think it got there faster than I could send a letter across our country. amazed at how fast it got there.
Wow. And how slow the USPS has been lately.
Well, yeah, you know, it's crazy times, but
mm-hmm. it could be worse. If it's going to Australia, I'm making
about
2 months to get things to Australia.
Wow.
Well, actually, it takes about a month to get in Australia, and then once it's in Australia, they're so shut down in parts of their country, it took another month for it to get delivered.
I was having that experience. It's usually a month before COVID, so. Yeah, getting from America to Australia is a slow process through the postal services.
Yeah. And then, as you know, any other service is way cost prohibitive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we shipped the shave horse and the bull horse through UPS.
Yeah.
And international shipping always kind of gives me cramps in my shoulders. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's getting less painful each time that I do it.
Hey, if the customer's willing to pay for it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is a great customer. So, I was happy to do it. And he's the guy who finally got me off my butt and got me to build a bull horse. So that was good. And those drawings they were sent off to Jeff Lefkowitz. So he's going to be drawing up some new drawings for me to offer as an option. I'll have a PDF that people can download for free on my site when that's done. And I'm talking to Dave Fisher. I think I'm going to redraw his plans mm-hmm. for just a solo bull horse. They're based on using just construction timber.
Right.
Cause as I was working through those, my design was based on his and, just kind of made to work with my horse. And, I found some things that, you know, some gaps in the measurements and things you had to kind of figure out. And, mm-hmm. I hate doing that with drawings. I just want to, you know, if I'm going to follow a set of drawings, I want them to be easy to follow. So
yeah.
He's been really generous to put those out and to let me use use his work as a reference. So I offered to redraw him, you know, more like an engineering drawing, and we'll see if he wants to post that on his site, or I'll post them on mine for free one way or the other. So, and then,
That bull horse is really cool. So you're going to have a separate one, if I'm understanding you correctly, just based on, Dave Fisher's design. It's a complete bull horse. And then you'll have other plans if you just want to build one that would fit on your bench, or that, Tim Manny, Pete Galbert type, shave horse.
Well, it'd have to be, I would call it the Tim Manny style base, okay. the twin rail base.
Yeah.
Because the original Galbert design, you can't really take it apart. It's not made to have the parts come off. And so this, the great thing about Tim's base is you can pop the shave horse parts off and put anything you want on that base. And I guess Brian Boggs probably ought to get a little bit of credit for that too. His shave horse has something similar to that. I'll have a drawing that's, you know, if you, all you want to do is shave bulls, or you want a dedicated horse, you can build that. And then there'll be another one that's if you want to add it on. And I'm sure if you made some minor adjustments, you could put it on a Tim Manny shave horse as well. The old style that he used to build. I think he still sells plans, actually. So,
yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I have a Galbert shave horse, and I do have a Tim Manny shave horse too. So, yeah, interesting. Yeah, I'm kind of interested in doing that, getting into bowls. But first, I got to get back to chair making, jig making.
Yeah,
I'm sure you know how that goes.
If you want to do woodworking for fun, don't start making tools. You keep tools.
I know. Exactly. So, well, and then I saw that you had a little mishap with a plane.
Yeah. I booby-trapped myself. I left a plane down at the end of the bench on the other end of a slab and couldn't see it. And I was sliding the slab off the end of the bench to pick it up, and heard a nasty thump on the ground. And that was my low-angle jack. But it was just the tote. I mean, it landed.
Yeah, I saw
on
the tote, and I was hoping that nothing else happened to the rest of it. So yeah.
There was a small ding on one of the corners. So I think the first bounce was the tote. The second bounce was like one of the rear corners, and then it landed on a pad.
Of course.
Yeah. So that, you know, that was the extent of the damage. It knocked the lever cap out, and the blade came flying out, but it didn't even chip the blade. So.
Wow.
I had to do a little filing on the corner of one of the sole, but other than that, you know, it's metal and wood. I mean, it's as long as it's still, you know, as long as you can get the bottom flat again, you're fine. So,
yeah.
But I just called them and ordered a new tote. It's like, I don't, you know, I have two of those planes because I was gearing up to have students, and so at some point, when I can't teach anymore, whenever that is, I'm going to have to get rid of one of these planes. Of course, I'm sure if my son has any interest, he'll end up with it. But
yeah.
And then this weekend, I'm taking him to a new local lumber supplier to pick out the material for his desktop.
Oh.
So he's pretty stoked about that. We're going to go get him a big cherry slab or walnut or whatever he wants. And that's the next thing. Once this bench clears the shop, I have to build a desk for him because he's learning this year.
Yeah.
So, that's my day job is remote learning with my son.
How old?
Night shift starts at 3:30. That's when I get to the shop.
Oh man.
So true.
That's something else. Well, listen, I know Mark's been on the show before, but I think it was a few years ago.
It's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while. So, why don't you refresh our listeners a little bit about your background and how you got into woodworking and building benches?
Well, you know, it started in the family. I have grandfathers on both sides who either did woodworking to make money or just for fun. One of my grandfathers decided he was going to make violins in his retirement and made three before he died. And, so I got to kind of see that happen. And, my other grandfather came out and, helped us, build cabinets for a house that we were remodeling. And my job was to hold the end of the plywood as he was pushing it across the table saw. So, you know, it was kind of just being around it. And right. it got into my blood. And you know, I started a woodworking business before I could drive a car, making little pine reindeer baskets to sell to gift shops.
Wow.
And, it was when I had to sell them that I lost interest. It was the making was fun, but the selling was not that interesting to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, then I got, old enough to drive and lost interest in anything other than, you know, driving around and working to earn money to drive around.
Right.
And then got back into it, after college, cause I bought a house that needed to be remodeled. And then found out through my family that I had a great uncle who was about to close down a furniture company here in Ozark in Missouri. And, I came out here to visit him and we kind of structured a deal where I could buy the business from him. And that in 2013 turned into a workbench business. And, I got into hand tools because, I was figuring out that I could not make a living making average furniture. It had to be really high end stuff because you can't beat Walmart on price. Right. And, the middle class, was dwindling and that's who our main customer was. So, in the process of trying to upgrade my skills, I realized that I didn't have a good workbench in the shop and, you know, did some research and found Christopher Schwarz's book, The Anarchist Tool Chest. And, you know, read his description on workbenches and decided, yep, that's the style that I think I'd like to build or I'd like to buy, but you couldn't buy it anywhere. So that's when I got into making the benches and it's just kind of grown from there. Sorry, yep. My cat's about to knock a fluorescent bulb off of a workbench. and then everything else has kind of grown out of my personal interest in woodworking. You know, the shave horses,
right,
came from, you know, taking a couple of chair making classes and, oh gosh, I don't know. Those are the two main things that I do as far as, you know, for sale for customers. The bull horses is another thing I want to do. Never can seem to, you know, carve out the time to do it. So,
Well, hopefully it was. Now for listeners who are not familiar, basically build the Roubaix workbench and it's the split top, correct?
Yeah. The company name Plate 11 is in reference to Roubaix's book, or one of his books. And yeah, the split top is, I kind of favor the split top one because I work alone.
Right.
And managing huge slabs, solid top slabs is kind of a problem. And the other one is a lot of my customers, you know, they have to carry this bench into a basement or, you know, down a flight of stairs or
right
whatever. And to be able to take it apart into, you know, 6 or 8 pieces to move it and then have it back together again in about 30 minutes is pretty convenient. So I don't know how often they move them, but they can if they want to.
Just exactly. The initial move in is much better.
Yeah, that's enough. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and your standard bench, looking at your site here, but it's 7 feet long by 22, almost a little over 22.5 inches wide or deep, and 4-inch top. So that's pretty substantial. Now, if someone wanted custom. Size, I'm sure they could order that from you, correct?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's kind of that's my thing is, you know, making a bench, they're all made to order. One day I may have enough time to build a spare, but the idea is to, you know, figure out what the person needs, how they want to use it, and then make sure that we build the right bench for that.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So if you're someone like me, well, before I built jigs, I built chairs. And so I like a wider bench just so I don't want the chair to accidentally fall off the side. Mm-hmm. Not that that's ever happened. But but yeah, so my bench I built before I got into chair making, but was the, what was it, the 21st century workbench type mm-hmm. design that mm-hmm. has the tool, removable tool tray in the middle of it. So I think my bench is, golly, I want to say like 38 inches wide. So mm-hmm. it's quite wide. And I used it in the past as two benches, kind of like, hey, I got, you know, it's two slabs. So I use the front slab as a bench and the back slab as a bench. But when I got into chair making, I went, wow, this is handy because I don't have to worry about the chairs falling off the side of the bench.
Yeah. Yeah.
unless you really try. Which
it's one of those things, happened. Though, because I've thought of, like, in my little tight space here in the basement, like, I literally have a door that is almost too deep. I wonder if I could do better with only, like, a 24-inch deep bench, you know, just to, I don't normally need that much depth. Mm-hmm. You know, the width will take up, you know, whatever, you know, should it be necessary. But, everyone's got different situations with what fits.
That's why you build to order.
Yeah. Yeah. And you may be asking yourself, why would we have Mark make a bench? And it's the slogan that's on one of the most comfortable t-shirts I have that I got from Mark years ago. And I've told him this before. It's seriously the most comfortable cotton shirt that I own. But it's because your workbench is a tool, not a rite of passage. Use it as such. Don't worry about making it. It's a tool.
It's just a stupid workbench, which is my favorite Peter Follansbee quote.
There you go.
Yeah, it's just a stupid workbench.
Yeah.
I mean, what other thing in your life would you spend too many nights thinking about, or too many, you know, too much time planning, or that you're just going to beat on, literally beat and drip things on, and just like, it's a bench. It's just a bench.
And looks like all your hardware is the bench crafted hardware. Is that correct? Or is that
I can build with just about any hardware. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, if, you know, because the photos are mostly bench-crafted stuff. Or I had a theory back in the day that the people who want wooden screw workbenches won't pay anybody to build it for them. They have to do it themselves. Because I had one with a wooden screw in it, and I hauled that thing to so many shows, ended up selling it to a guy who lives 5 miles from me. But that thing went to Texas, it went to North Carolina, it went to Chicago. I mean, it went everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And that guy actually, it was a solid top bench. It was the, you know, a full on, Rubo workbench. He sold his house and they wanted the bench with the house, and he's in the process of ordering another bench now. So, it's pretty funny. How that works.
Yeah, that is pretty funny. Yeah, that reminds me when Patrick was moving, he just built himself a Rubo, and we moved that, and he had it Nicholson. And I go, what are you going to do with the Nicholson? He goes, well, I may move it, but maybe if I can find somebody that wants to keep it, I'll throw it in with the house. So,
wow.
We'll see. Well, for an added charge, I think. But you
sure.
Know. But yeah, I thought that was kind of funny. But so you build your benches, but you also build shave horses too. I think you kind of alluded to, and those are super nice. I got the pleasure of working with one when I took a class with Christopher Swartz. It was a Welsh chair. Chris Williams. But so I didn't really use it for the class, but I got to play around with it in the back room, and that is just a fantastic shave horse.
Yeah. Yeah, and your buddy that just moved, he's got one too.
Yes. Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
But I think he built that one. He built
it. Yeah. Yeah, I think he got your plans and hardware and stuff and built that one. Yeah. So, yeah, and I played around with it a little bit, but not as much as the one that in Chris Horse's shop. So, yeah, it's really great. And, you know, I built mine too, but boy, I need to add that pinhead feature to mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
I got a chance to play with that some years ago, and yeah, it's really, really pretty cool. That's as I go along my slow stroll towards that. I'm not a chair maker. I don't own a draw knife, you know, but I want to have a fro and a draw knife and a shave horse. So for some reason, I think I need that kind of tool application in my working space. So maybe someday.
A draw knife is a great way to rough out bevels, big bevels, fast. You know, the second choice would be, you know, a jack planer or a little power planer, hand planer. But
right.
But yeah, I mean, if you need to put a big bevel on something, it's hard to beat a draw knife.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Or even for turners, if you got a, you know, you got a square stock and you want to knock the corners off, boom,
yeah,
you're done. And
yep,
and half the time it would take you to get some sort of turn the bandsaw on practically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, speaking of shave horses, you also sell hardware. So you sell plans for it, but you also sell hardware for it, which is really interesting. You sell the little pivot feature that's in the Galbert adjuster.
Yeah. So the plans, the plans come with that hardware. That's the only way the plans come, because that's the heart of the thing. You know, the drawings don't work without it. But yeah, Galbert, Pete brought me that design. He had a prototype that he was working with, and he likes to use a half inch dowel for his pivot pin. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we worked out a deal where I agreed to make the half inch version so that he could send people to me to get it. And then I also make the quarter inch version for my plans. And the quarter inch version is just to satisfy my unrealistic desire to have very fine adjustments on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes so that you can have smaller steps between heights, and it's probably overkill, but you know, I guess I get to choose. I made it. So
yeah. I mean, is there any difference? I mean, major difference between strength, or besides the adjustable heights, between the half inch or quarter inch steps, are you seeing any? I mean, I don't think
it makes a huge difference. I think the real advantage to having that as an option is if you already built a Galbert shave horse, you can retrofit the swing arm for your shave horse and put this hardware in it and just go on down the road like nothing happened. So I have had a few people ask about using the half inch adjuster with the plans, but the plans don't, they'd have to be, you know, we have to rework all the geometry. And so we usually end up going back to the quarter inch pin. So it's not, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen of another. That's the size I chose to design the product. And that's the road we went down. So,
well, I wish those would have been available when I built mine.
Well, you can retrofit yours if you want. I've got them.
Mine works
in the garage.
Mine works good, but it took a lot of thinking. I'm actually using dominoes at an angle.
Oh, okay.
And what was funny is Diami, when he visited my shop a year or so ago, he was looking at my shave horse and he saw that I was using dominoes, you know, as the little pins, and he goes, "How did you get the dominoes at that angle?" And I started looking at it and I went, "I have no idea, but obviously I did it."
I don't remember.
It just worked out that way.
Yeah. I think there's some magic at the table saw. I don't think they were at that angle, but after I cut it at the table saw just right, they ended up at that angle, I think. But anyway, hey, I did it once, and I guess if I was going to do it again, I would order your hardware. So
there you go.
Make it easy on yourself.
Exactly.
Hold on before we go. I don't know if we're going to leave his store, but I noticed, I was like, oh, what's under accessories? Moxon springs.
Yes.
I live under a rock. And so if these came out before, I don't know, but I built a Moxon pretty much as soon as Benchcraft had brought out the hardware. So I've got it. Actually, it's on my bench right now. That seems like the stupidest simple thing that I could add to that would make it easier to keep those things open when I'm loading things. Are those who thought of those? I know you're carrying
David
them.
Barron. David okay. Barron thought of that, and I was watching a video that he put on YouTube, and he's like, "Just go out to the hardware and pick up a couple of these springs." And I was like, "I think I'll do that," you know. And then I searched and searched and searched and searched and could not find them anywhere. McMaster Car didn't have any. So I thought, okay, I'm just gonna, you know, so I found a custom spring manufacturer and I ordered like 150 of them, and I was like, I'll just sell these, you know. It doesn't, if anybody wants them, I'll have them. I sell I don't have them on my site because I haven't photographed them yet, but I sell jaws for the Moxon.
Okay.
And so I throw a pair of those in with every set of jaws. At some point I'll sell out of them, and then I'll just buy 150 more or 200 more, whatever the minimum order is. But yeah, it's I showed it to Jamil Abraham of Benchcrafted, and I said, you know, what do you think of these? And he just shouted, superfluous, you know. And I thought, well, I'm gonna have to put that review on my website.
There you go.
They're not necessary, but they do. It's just a little simple convenience, you know.
Yeah, and it is. It's like the creature comfort that, I mean, I'm looking at it. I don't have these yet, but I will be in short order, please, putting in an order. No, and I don't use my microphone.
Before the end of this show, yes.
No, hopefully. I've spent enough money this week, so it might not be right today. But it is a thing. The Moxon Vice, the travel on their hardware, you might get a little over 2 inches of capacity, depending. My jaws are like 8-quarter ash. So there's a lot of meat eaten up there, but you know, there's a lot of travel there. And the other day I was trying to work on like basically a 2x4, but I was cutting it, and it's a thing where you like those wheels, Benchcrafted wheels, you just go whoosh, and you spin them and they back off, but the jaw's not coming with it. So it's a two thing. I got to unscrew two different wheels and then pull this jaw click until it hits where the jaws are open to. And that would just be the simplest thing for have it walk back as you're loosening the jaw. Like, that's such a duh kind of thing.
You can train yourself when you pull the part out to pull the jaw at the same time.
Sure.
But I was never able to do that. It's just one of those things. You don't think about it until you need the jaws open and they're not open.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or more often than not, I have both hands on a handle. I'm screwing the two screws simultaneously. And so it's another action to pull the jaw open because you can't really do that. They're not connected, you know, unless I, anyway. But yeah, no, that's like such a simple little thing, but brilliant. Superfluous as it may be. If that's superfluous, so is a St. Peter's cross in your leg vise.
Exactly. Yeah. Except I would never have a workbench without one.
I agree. Having used one and seen it in action, you'd bet your bottom dollar I'd never, never, ever.
Well, that's great. Well, talking about interesting things, the blog post you did today on the dog holes, I just slapped myself upside the forehead when I read that. I'd never thought about doing that.
Yeah, I hadn't either. It's funny you say you slapped your forehead. I when I wrote that sentence about stupid simple, I actually started out with forehead slappingly simple. but I just couldn't bring myself to. My computer was having a fit over the spelling, and so I rewrote it. But yeah, that's the same thing. It's just like, oh, it's so, you know.
Yeah.
You've got torque. You have 2 points. You can fight. You can reverse the torque. And it was just one of those. You know, that's one of the things I love about teaching is the students. You know, they have a whole different experience before they come to your shop, and they'll ask a question that forces you to think about something the way that you haven't done it. And then, you know, you walk away from that experience having learned as much as they did. And it's brilliant. Or they ask you why you're doing it a certain way. And it may be a process that you came up with 5 or 10 years ago that is totally irrelevant now. You know, like, oh, why are you doing it this way? You've got this drill press over here. You know. And so that was one of those moments where the student, you know, showed me something, and I was really, really happy that he did.
Yeah. What we're talking about for the listeners is basically being able to stabilize a piece of wood to do some sort of planing operation or something, and just like wedging it between two bench dogs. So pictures do this better than 1,000 words could. So if you're check on over to plate11.com and go to the blog, and he has a blog post there on it, and it's absolutely fantastic. The post is called "You Can Take My Tail Vise, But I'm Keeping My Dog Holes." That is just that's just like wedging something between the two. You know, as soon as I saw that, I went, oh, that's kind of like Chris Schwartz had on the Roman workbenches, but I never thought about using it on mine.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I like really long bench dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I usually make them about 3 inches longer than the thickness of the bench because you can stick them up really high.
Yeah.
You can wedge things against them, and it's handy.
Yeah, that is cool. Okay.
That's kind of thing. I've come into that, you know, you know, I have like a put on the bench kind of bench stop. It's just a sheet of half inch plywood with boards on two sides of it.
But yeah, bench hook.
Bench hook. And it does the same purpose, but it's like I can't put dogs in what I work on, but but I find ways of doing that. Like sometimes I go into that thing, I clamp that thing around so it doesn't slide side to side, and I'm going at it on an angle because whatever I have is bigger than it needs to be or whatever. And it's just the two points of contact make something so much more stable mm-hmm. in general, and that's all you might need in a lot of applications.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So tell us a little bit about what you have going on now. I think you got a new class, but it's going to be an online class. You're calling it Workbench at Home or something?
Yeah, Workbench class at home. Mm. It's basically while our student is at home, I can't teach. My wife doesn't have enough vacation days to allow me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to come up with sort of a hybrid class that allows you to work at your own pace a little bit, but also have something of the experience of a class. So there's pre-recorded videos that come out in a sort of on a timed schedule each week. And then there is a weekly meeting, a live video conference meeting with the entire class, as well as like office hours, I guess. You know, you could visit one-on-one and ask questions if you need it.
Oh.
And it all hinges around a workbench kit
mm-hmm.
That's got all the really nasty bits done. So the idea is that an absolute beginner could take this class and end up with, you know, essentially the same bench that I would build here in the shop.
Hmm.
And, you know, the majority of the joinery is cut, but you have to do some fitting.
Okay.
There's some tenons that have to be cut by hand, ideally. That's what the instruction will show. But the end cap is fitted. All of the vise, well, 95% of the vise work is done, which is the thing that really stresses people out. It used to stress me out a lot. But this is a matter of really like drilling some pilot holes and screwing things together so that... you can, you know, the kit will show up a few weeks early. You build a pair of sawhorses. So I talked to Roy Underhill. I was trying to figure out how to bootstrap this thing together. So assuming somebody didn't really have anything other than a cheap pair of sawhorses, how could they do this work? And a blog post came up with they printed an excerpt on Lost Art Press from Roy Underhill's book, the Calvin Cobb Radio Woodworker.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this printout called the shave horse that say or the work the sawhorse that saved Thanksgiving. And it hit me like, oh, we could modify this design to have one straight leg so that you could bolt your leg vise leg to it or clamp your leg vise leg to it while you were working. And so I talked to Roy and got permission to modify his design. And so that'll be part of the class, too. It's a set of drawings for building a pair of sawhorses. So when you unpack your bench from the crate, you flip the front half of the top upside down, install the tail vise, flip it back over, and clamp it to the sawhorses, and you have half a workbench. So, and it's got a tail vise in it.
Oh, fantastic.
So then you can... work on your leg joinery, work on your rail joinery, work on your bases, you know, all that, all the stuff that, all the work holding problems are solved by right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the first thing you do the first week is to install the tail vise. And then, you know, once you get the base together, you put the top on it and you're done. So it should take, I think we can do it in 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm, you know, with this first run through as a pilot, so I'm only doing somewhere between 4 and 6 students.
Right.
I want to make sure we kind of get the kinks out. I'm looking for people who are willing to, you know, give good feedback and contribute to, you know, making the course better for the next people.
Mm-hmm.
And the registration for that will open, let's see, this is coming out on the 14th.
Yes.
So the registration will open the following Saturday, the 21st.
Oh, fantastic.
So that'll be on my site. I've got a, I'll have the registration page up by the end of this week, and then people will be able to take a look at it, get a better description. But cool. I've gotten some good feedback from people yeah. who've contacted me about taking classes. You know, they're disappointed, of course. I am too, but, you know, we got to do what we can do. So I'm hoping that it can branch out to other things.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to teach some other classes, and I may be able to convince some other instructors to maybe be a guest instructor. So we'll see. We'll see. I got to get the kinks worked out on my stuff first, and then I'll have a formula.
Yeah, exactly. So so this kit that you buy, so it includes the hardware as well as the wood, for lack of a better
lumber.
Term.
Yeah,
lumber.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's everything you need to build the bench other than the tools.
Okay.
I was going to say, and so are you? Are there efforts to confirm that the buyer has the essential tools to make this happen?
There is a tool list on the site.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So if you click on the classes tab on the menu, there'll be a workbench class at home option. And when you click on that, it's got, I did some videos a while back to kind of introduce it and describe it. And at the bottom, there's a preliminary tool list and then a, a preliminary schedule for the class. Okay. So
let me see. Medium jack plane, got that. Low angle block plane, no, but I might be able to make that work.
A block shoulder plane.
A block plane. I've got a block plane. Shoulder plane, yeah. Smoother, yeah. Joiner, it's a 6, not a 7.
That'll you work. Know,
could make
that's
it
just
work.
For flattening the top. You don't really need it for very many other things.
A flush cut saw, yes. A carcass saw, I don't actually have. I don't have any back saw of that size.
Have you got a good Japanese pull saw?
I don't. But yeah. I know that's like I'd have to look at this and go, what could I do? You know, and I don't. I've only got dovetail saws as far as back saws. Everything else, I've got old Distons, but none of them are like that. And I've always wanted a bad axe saw, but don't.
Yeah, there that's you go. What that's There's probably what I'd recommend is get a bad axe carcass saw that's filed hybrid and be done with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Sounds like you got 90% of the tools.
I do. I mean, that's it. I could make it do.
You could get one of those hardware store saws from Tools for Working Wood and cut your tenons off the knife line and come back and finish them with a chisel. So that's the idea here is to give people the experience of solving these problems so that, you know, they have that toolkit, the mental toolkit, along with the tools themselves to be able to bootstrap something together. And I think, you know, once you finish this project, you'll have a lot more confidence moving forward for other things. I think, Sean, you've probably got a lot of the basic skills. It wouldn't be a big stretch for you, but
it wouldn't.
Most of my students who come to do the in-person classes are complete hand tool beginners.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
They show up with boxes, tools in boxes that have never been sharpened. You know, so we start from the ground up.
Yes, I can imagine. Yes, you need to sharpen this first. And by the way, I'm not sure this plane has seen better days. I can imagine.
Yeah, sometimes they bring the old stuff, and I say, "Well, here I've got an extra one of these low angle jacks. Let's just use that."
Yeah.
That's a whole different class, and it's when I started in hand tools, I started looking for old tools, and I lost patience with that so fast.
Oh yeah.
Except for
draw knives.
I didn't need that many. I only needed 3 or 4. So I got 2 or 3 and made do with those for a few years actually, and then started adding to the collection. So.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. So this is you said this is going to be the first class, and then you're going to based on your feedback and kind of tweak it here and there, and this is something that you plan on doing ongoing.
Because it's asynchronous and because
That was my next question. Yeah. So you don't have to attend a class. This is something you can work on by yourself, looking at some of this online content. And then, like you said, you have the office hours and so to speak.
Yeah. So the class will run 6 weeks or 8 weeks, whatever it ends up being. And you have access to counseling or, you know, coaching during that time for an hour or so a week. Mm-hmm. And I can do those in the evenings.
Yep.
So, I mean, I could, and it's just a couple hours a week. It's, so I, you know, something that's completely manageable to do, even if I'm teaching an in-person class.
Yeah.
So I think it's, and it's, you know, it's a full-on reaction to the pandemic. It's, mm-hmm. you know, trying to find a way to make this work.
Yeah.
And without sitting there next to my 7-year-old on a Zoom call all day long, I would never have thought it would be this simple, you know, or possible.
Well, this could be, you know, like I said, that's why I was wondering if this is something ongoing once you get back to offering in-person classes. Because as you know, anybody that attends these classes, hey, the class is great. You know, you pay for the class and all of that and the lumber and all the tools and stuff that you use. But you also got to factor in travel costs and hotel costs and time off work.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
I mean, it's something like this, like, you know, as exciting.
And especially you're getting that kit. The kit is what impresses me. You're getting the kit with all the lumber and hardware. So,
well, yeah,
that is just that. That's great. It's just saying, OK, go to your own lumber yard and, you know, get 12 quarter maple and da 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 da.
Right. Yeah. Sourcing that is hard. Yeah. I'm pulling through multiple pages and looking at schedules and everything, like, what is the cost of the online class?
It's $39.95 for the first run.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which is the same as a 7-day class here. But the big difference is there's a lot more work on the front end that I have to do.
Does your price include the kit, the lumber, or does it have to be sourced by you?
The kit is everything. So you actually get 4 legs that have already got all the mortises cut, all the holes drilled in them. You get 4 short rails that go between, you know, the front and the back legs. The mortise or the tenons are cut on those, but they're oversized. So that gives you a chance to kind of practice fitting a joint. Mm-hmm. And then the long rails are just sticks cut to length and 4 square. Okay. So on those, you have to actually lay out the tenons, cut them by hand, and fit them.
But that right there, like, demonstrates the schedule is actually not that intensive at that. No. I mean, obviously, this is a class that you could teach in a matter of a week, that the online instruction is lasting 6 weeks, but it's broken down into these little sections. You've got all those pre-cut details already taken care of, and so building up the horses of the bench, fine. Installing a tail vise, fine. You know, fit the tenons, it's a week of that. You know, it's not.
Yeah, it's
this
really
afternoon.
4 to 8 hours a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's not
intense at
all.
And I think probably closer to 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's meant to people who are busy, people who can't get away from for a class. You know, even during normal times. The idea is to make this class viable long term. And so, I mean, I have people who approach me about taking classes who are Saturday Sabbath observant. And mm-hmm. so it's mm-hmm. really hard for them to do a 7-day class. This is something they can do.
Right.
You know, and so it's, you know, and it's, you know, I think the only like really hardcore work you would have to do as far as, you know, like shaping wood would be the chop at the end. And I would, you know, that I would leave that up to the customer, you know, the student. If they wanted me to rough shape it first, they could have it rough shape, or I could leave it as a blank. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like all the cavities for the vices, they're already cut. You know, that alone, I mean, that it takes me 30 minutes to install a leg vise now, starting from that point. And that's a day of work, you know, if you're having to excavate all the cavities and then all the mm-hmm. stress of getting the layout right. And so I wanted to remove that. I mean, how many times are you going to have to install this type of hardware again?
Right.
It's not, to me, you know, if you look at it from the very small components of the work, yes, it's precision layout and measurement and all that stuff. But as far as all this stuff together, it's installing a vise that you should never have to install again.
Right.
So I didn't see that as a massively valuable experience for a student, especially if you're just starting out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, this is absolutely fascinating. I mean, if you needed a split top Rubo, I don't think You could ask for a better class as well as getting that whole kit. That's what just blows my mind. Yeah. And of course, you know, if you did perhaps make some mistake, I'm sure you have all the tricks and knowledge on here's how you fix that.
Yes, I've made them probably.
Exactly.
I wouldn't worry about that. We've had to fix a few mistakes during classes, and then, you know, I just posted a pair of holes that I drilled in the wrong location just this week on Instagram. Making a left-hand bench using a right-hand story pole, not symmetrical.
And
you just won't have to worry about that because those mortises will already be cut.
Exactly.
Yeah. You just have to fit the tenons to go into them. So.
Yeah. And that is just fascinating. So good luck to you on getting this done. And, you know, like I said, it sounds like it's going to be great long term also.
I hope so.
And you need to, once you get this perfected, I assume a shave horse class is coming and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be done. I think, I've got the videos for that already. So
yeah,
we'll see how people do. They're doing really well with the kits on their own. But we'll see, you know, what the feedback is on the videos. And, I really just wanted to support people with that since I sell a kit.
Yeah.
I wanted them to have more than just the written directions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only taken 3 years to get it done.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's still not done.
Well, at least you have it all shot. So you just
do. Yeah.
And, of course, editing ends up taking about as long as it does shooting them. So
yeah,
if not longer sometimes.
But I can at least ship product, you know, ship my work as I go. You know what I mean? I can finish an episode and put it up. So, I'm looking forward to getting those out the door.
Well, I'm also real interested about your teaching environment, about your shop. So when you do have in-person classes, tell us a little bit about your shop. You said it was used to be a furniture factory or?
Well, yeah, so that's where I was when I started the business, or the workbench side of things. After a few years of that, I ended up moving to a building on my property. So the house is across the driveway, and it's a 30 by 40 steel building that's got spray foam insulation in it, and the walls are sheathed up to 8 feet, so... it's a lot like, really big, regular, really big house building, you know?
Yeah.
And it's air conditioned and heated because why not? You're going to be in it every day.
Right.
And I have, one half or maybe one third of the shop is where all the big machines are. The big Tanowitz bandsaw and the planer and the straight line rip saw and a big pile of lumber most of the time. And then on the other end of the shop,
pretty big industrial machines that most hobbyist woodworkers don't have. So
you're
moving those slabs, easy. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny they don't. Well, the sander used to be one. It was a big deal when I bought it for the furniture business. It took me a couple years to save up for it, and then like 2 years later, that business was done. And now I only use it to thickness, do the final thicknessing on bench tops. I don't, because I've gotten so far into hand tools, I don't use it on furniture. And if I make a piece for myself, it doesn't get sanded. So it's funny, you know, I run it through the planer to get it to thickness. I build the thing and then I plane it, plane. So, but the majority of the shop is workbenches. I have 4 workbenches that are mine in here right now. One of them is set up kind of as a dedicated sharpening station. And then the other 2 of them are used on and off by me and the student or the 2 students. And then the other one is the one where you're allowed to put your drinks or your, set stuff down if you don't know where it goes, if you borrowed it and, it'll get put away. But, it's kind of like being a house guest, honestly. That's how I look at it. It's another reason why it kind of stinks to have the coronavirus going around because we can't. I feed people. I cook meals. I prepare meals in advance and feed people home cooked meals.
Oh, and that's nice.
On the days when we don't do that, I take them to little local restaurants, places we just love to go and can't wait to share with guests. And then the instruction is, you know, the shop is basically yours to use whenever or however you need while you're here. So if you need to stay late to sharpen or, you know, I don't know, tune up an old hand plane or whatever, you're welcome to do it. I just ask that people don't use the power tools.
Right.
And let me know that they're here and let me know when they go so that I can check on them, make sure they didn't, you know, put a chisel through their hand or something.
Right.
But exactly. But yeah, it's you know, I have when you come to take a workbench class, it's you know, 4 big chunks of wood for the legs and 8, well actually it's usually 16 strips of maple for the tops.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we hit the ground running on the first day, we get all that stock dimensioned, and then we have the bench ply lottery, which is, you know, the way that we go through to pick. If you have 2 students, you know, there's a system for picking the plies that go into their benches. So I give them a little coaching on, you know, what to look for, you know, decide what your pattern's going to be, grain, all that stuff. And then we sort of dry assemble the bench tops, get them, you know, get all the order figured out where the plies need to be in the slab. And by the end of the first day, we've got half of each bench glued up, the tops. And, the second day, three of the 4 plies are glued up and we're working on the condor tails for the end cap. So, you know, we just kind of move through it. You know, you just stay with it. It's a pretty tiring 7 days, but
yeah,
it's pretty cool to see the benches come together.
Rewarding at the same time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And what are the accommodations as far as, around there, hotels, bed and breakfast?
There's a couple Airbnbs. Of hotels. Yeah, there's a couple hotels in Ozark. They're not fabulous. There's a lot of Airbnb. There's one in particular that's right above our favorite breakfast place. And that's the one that I recommend on my site. But if you're looking for a major hotel chain, Springfield has them and it's 20 minutes away. So it's not hard to find a place to stay around here.
So how heavy is this bench once you have it built?
When they ship in the crate, they're a little over 400 pounds.
Okay.
So probably 350, 375, something like that.
So do you find most of your students, you know, bringing trucks and driving there, or do you have some that actually fly in and then ship them back?
I've had both. Typically, okay. They drive. But yeah, I've had both. I've packaged and shipped, I think, 2 benches to students at this point. So yeah, it's, you know, it's just another bench for me. I've got the packing down to a pretty good science. It's actually easier to ship a student bench because I don't have to detail it as it goes into the crate. they do that when they get it home. So
right.
I just have to make sure that it's, you know, doesn't look any different when it gets there than when it left here. So, but yeah, I think you build enough crates and you see what they look like on the other end. You find the weak spots and you eliminate them. So, so it's pretty simple thing nowadays.
Well, and wrapping up this interview, this has been fascinating stuff, but, tell us a little bit about some of your other woodworking. I know you're a little bit into chair making and some other things too, correct?
Yeah. I think if I had to veer one direction away from workbenches or shave horses, it would be chairs. I took my first chair class with Jeff Lefkowitz and made a Boggs chair and had a great time doing that. And then went with some friends to take a class at Greg Pennington's place. And I've been to Greg's place several times. I went on a vacation in Maine and saw a chair that I thought was pretty cool and took a bunch of notes and reproduced it when I got home. And that's led to some ideas for a different chair that I want to make here before too long. But I don't know. Just gotta get all these other things sorted. I've got a lot of irons in the fire right now. So
yeah, definitely. So I would ask you our last question. What's coming up next for you? But it sounds like you have a lot going on right now.
Yeah, it's going to be the desk for my son.
Exactly.
So it's going to be a sort of a revised version of the staked work table from the Anarchist Design Book.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. That would be cool.
Yeah, so I'm going to... There's a couple little design features on that I didn't like. Although I like that whole style much more than I did when I first saw it. But yeah, I figure that's going to be the straightest route from A to B and getting this desk done with something that I can break down and send with him whenever he moves. So
yeah. Now that's the one that has the legs into the beam that's got a sliding dovetail into the top.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. The idea with this is going to be to put a tapered sliding dovetail.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually going to put stretchers between the front and back legs to kind of stiffen them up a bit.
Yeah.
And so you can drive the legs in from the back and then drive them back out if you need to take the thing apart. And, so it won't go all the way through to the front, which is one of the things I didn't like, is seeing that batten, the end of that bat. And then there'll be a bank of drawers that goes all the way across the front, and it'll break right where the batten is. So it'll be a clean front with legs coming out the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how it turns out. it'll be a desk one way or the other.
Exactly. But, it sounds like that's something that he'll have for quite a while. So yeah, that's going to be great.
Yeah. I'm going to see if I can drag him out here to work on it with me. So he's definitely, we're going to film him while he's picking out his top and we'll get him involved in it and get it documented. So,
oh, so cool.
Yeah.
That is cool.
He loves being in the videos. He's got his own YouTube channel. So
does he?
Yeah. We make some videos once in a while and put them up on YouTube. So he always loves plugging that channel.
Well, I was about to say, he needs to plug it in the videos. Yeah. He might get a few follows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Well, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll be first out of the chute, so to speak. And with that, mine is You'll Shoot Your Eye Out. It's, yes, a Christmas ale from Carbach. And yes, I promote this every year. I don't know if it's the best Christmas ale, but it's definitely got the best title. So
it does. And yes. It's that time of the year. It's still not Thanksgiving, and we're getting Christmas beer. How about that?
Exactly. So stock up.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So, Sean, what are you drinking?
So I'm going to roll it back. Well, okay, I'm going to talk about two. The one I drank tonight, which is what I have, there's a local brew pub. What is it when they – it's a microbrewery? Are those still a thing?
A tasting room?
No. There's no distribution. It's just this place that's actually in my tiny little suburb. Former NFL kicker that came from the area said, I'm done with football and I'm going to come here and I'm going to make this. And so they have like 12 or 14 brews of their own. They've got a complete brewery right there. So this is one of their taps. And so we picked up food and we got a couple half growlers filled the other day. This is their New England IPA they call the Devil Wears Hoodies, which who knows why they named it that, whatever. It's a good New England IPA. It's not terribly crazy. But to combat your Christmas ale, what we got and already have drank because we got this the other day is their Smashed Pumpkin Ale, which was still available in November, thankfully, because darn it, Halloween was just a few weeks ago. Let's not get away from that all too soon. But no, something
that
no one...
Thanksgiving's coming up, so, you know.
Yeah, it's true. But unfortunately, no distribution. No one else can get this unless they live in my area. And if you want to drive to Sylvania, Ohio, you can go to Inside the Five and get this. It's a football term or a kicker, you know, that they want to punt it inside the 5 yard line. Mm-hmm. So the restaurant or whatever it's called is called Inside the Five.
So he must have been a punter then.
He was for the Dolphins. Other Miami team. And I don't know if he went to Michigan State or something like that and then ended up floating down to Florida for the NFL briefly. Don't even know the guy's name. Don't know that he did anything good, but that's the story that I've heard. And just started up a couple of years ago and they actually make pretty good stuff. It's kind of nice to get a local.
It wouldn't be Roby, would it? His name Roby, last name.
Now I'm going to find out. Talk amongst yourself.
I used to be a big Dolphins fan. That's why I know it. They had this punter named Roby, and he was a huge guy. And he would take like one step and just boom these things.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He made
this guy. I don't think he's that old.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because he was a kicker probably in the 90s for Miami. Or late 80s to mid 90s.
Started as a home brewer.
I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's the only punter I know for Miami.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe not. Keep talking. Maybe I'll find this. Hold on. Mark, what do you got?
I can't get it here. I would just kill for War Pigs.
Who makes that?
Three Floyds.
Oh yeah. It's between us, kind of. Three Floyds is about an hour and a half away from me.
Oh really?
It's not that far. I know. And I played around with it.
Pick some up and send it over to Mark.
Yeah.
You can't get it in this state. I had it in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And found it. We were on our way home from a family reunion from my wife's side of the family, and had it for lunch and went to I was like, where is the nearest liquor store? I went and bought a couple of six packs and took it home and treasured it. And it's been gone for months. So
there you go.
Yeah, that's kind of what started my interest in hazy IPAs or the New England IPAs is the Three Floyds. So.
Yeah, Three Floyds makes good stuff. Yeah. They're out of Indiana. So there's northern distribution to them.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I have friends in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and we put on as far as South Bend, and Three Floyds is somewhere around there. The one time that we tried to stop in, it was like a Sunday and they had really funky hours and it was kind of crazy to go through there. But yeah, it's popular around here is Gumball Head and a couple other areas that actually we get distribution of.
Okay.
Here in town.
I've never tasted any of their other beers.
No, there you go. Yeah,
that's the one.
It's good. I mean, yeah, anything Three Floyds is well regarded. I think. I don't think there's a bad brew among them. But yeah, if you're into IPAs, keep trying IPAs. There's all different varieties of them.
Oh yeah.
Even their own IPAs. So Kyle, I found out Brandon Fields is the guy's name.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's younger than me. He's 36. He played. Actually, he went to school here in town. That's kind of crazy. He was in the NFL draft in 2007.
Yeah. Okay.
So played with the Dolphins for 7 years.
Well, okay. Must not have been that bad, but.
Yeah, it wasn't terrible, apparently.
Yeah, but
kickers are.
Yeah, once Dan Marino retired, I kind of lost my, my love for the Dolphins and, you know, just reverted back to my love of the Cowboys, which is not very good.
Yeah, how's that going?
Not too good. Could be worse, you know, but not much.
I would normally say you could be a Browns fan, but they're not actually that bad this year.
Exactly. Oh, well. So, well, with that, Mark, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
So, plate11.com.
Mm-hmm.
The only real social media I do is Instagram, and my handle there is MarkBuildsIt.
Yes.
And I do have a YouTube channel. It's Plate 11 Woodworking, but honestly, you're better off subscribing to the blog because everything I put on YouTube gets put on the blog, but not everything on the blog gets put on YouTube. So,
yep.
There you go.
The blog's definitely worth a subscribe because there's all sorts of good hints and tips in there.
Yeah, I've been, I didn't do much with it, but I'm really trying, I'm committed to trying to, get some content up there. So I've got tomorrow I'm posting plans for a layout, how I would lay out the top of a 60 inch split top.
Mm-hmm.
I had a guy ask about that. And so I'm doing that. And then the next day there'll be, if you didn't want a tail vise, this is what I would change. And then, I'm thinking about doing a series, called The Armchair Anarchist, which basically, I was reading Chris's Anarchist Workbench book.
Pretty good. I'm about halfway through it.
It's great. Happiest day of my life. I got mentioned in a Christopher Schwarz book alongside Lee Nielsen and Benchcrafted.
Yes, yes. I did read that part. I should have brought that up. Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I think I just finished that a couple nights ago and they said, yes, and if you want to buy one, here who you need to go see. Yes.
They make pretty good benches, or something like that. Yeah, so that was cool. But I want to go through his design logic and my design logic and kind of compare them. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's Christopher Schwarz. I don't question anything he does, but I learned most of what I know about workbench design from his writing. So, we have a little bit different approach to things, like the dog holes along the front of the bench. And that's kind of what I'll be talking about in the upcoming blog post, is even if you aren't going to have a tail vise, I think I would recommend having some holes along the front edge, just so you can wedge part in there and work on it. They wouldn't need to be as close together as they would for a tail vise, but you'll see when I post the drawings. So
cool. Well, looking forward to that. So, Sean, where can folks find you?
Most everywhere. I am SeanW78. Plain and simple. Find me there. How about you, Kyle?
You can always find me at Barton.Kyle on Instagram, the only social media platform that matters. And with that, that just about wraps it up for this show. So if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review.
Thanks for listening. You can always follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. It's where everybody, all the cool kids are anyway. The best thing you can do, though, is just tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.